Welcome one and all to another episode of the BIMO podcast with me, Jared.
And me, Anthony. You're listening to the best of BIMO, or Belfast podcast,
Jared. I was about to get that in. But today we're sitting with a local playwright and author, Kieran McGee.
And very handsome man, might I add.
Thank you, Anthony. Thank you. So are you.
Welcome, Kieran, to the podcast.
Yeah, thank you.
So, I've known you a good way, so I have, and you're...
God bless me.
Do you want to tell people the real reason? The first time I met you?
When I was teaching you, and it's in Callum's. Yes,
you were driving that wee shitty car.
Oh, yes, yeah. Get rid of that, though, so it's all right.
I had him, was it history, I think it was?
History, yes, I was up subbing in St. Callum's at the time, yeah.
And I was class clown, and acting the deck, and then you picked me up beside you. And then I started staking your car, you threw me out of the class.
But let you back in again.
I don't even think the best thing in this car.
No, sure. Fucking cheeky me now, it is a car's I drive.
No, cars have never been my god. No.
I thought it was just inspired.
You inspired me to buy shite cars.
There you go. There you are. I always remember a good teacher here.
Well, you do? Yeah. You remember your favourite teacher too?
Mrs. McClellan. English, because she was a fantastic. I think that's where I got my love of writing.
Sure, it wasn't a wee boyhood fantasy, no. So, you touched on it there. What is your inspiration for writing?
Basically, I always loved reading as a kid. And so, to be a writer, you have to be a reader. And to be a playwright, you have to watch plays. So, you have to learn your trade, and you have to read. You have to go to classes on writing classes. So I've been to numerous ones. Then eventually, and also the main thing is you have to have a passion for writing, because you're sitting at a laptop, sitting typing every day if you want to get something done.
What inspires you to write?
It's like somebody that loves cooking. They'll cook every day and you'll not even ask them because it's their passion. I just love writing.
Do you write every day?
I write every day. And I've got into the habit now of writing on my phone, so I can sit and write a short story in an hour or two, just sitting on my phone in the house, sitting in the living room.
You do voice notes or was you type it?
I type it in my notes, yeah.
Have you thought about doing it over voice notes?
No, never have, no. I enjoy the whole process of writing. And I enjoy the whole process that you have on your phone, that also you can edit it right away, right there and then.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, that's how a lot of comedians work nowadays, that think of something and just write it down on their phone or their iPad. Yeah. And it just develops and
that's
becomes,
like it.
Becomes an art on set.
Yeah, well, comedians years ago would have had a notebook in their pocket and a pen. Nowadays people have a phone, so I just type in my notes.
Do you enjoy seeing a sentence forming? Like, if you're thinking, if you're free-flowing something, and obviously you have a great vocabulary, do you sort of structure the sentence or the paragraph around a certain word or an idea? What way would it work?
I used to have a bad habit of using ing words starting sentences with, like, lifting up the hammer, I smashed it on top of his head, right? And then the more writing classes, the more
it's almost like an action word, like lifting or doing.
Well, that's the continuous, that's the past continuous. But basically what I learned now is you be more direct in your writing. Instead of lifting up the hammer, you just write, I lifted up the hammer and smashed it on top of his head. I know it's a simple difference, but it does improve your writing, wee tiny things like that.
Probably improves it for the reader as well.
It improves it for the reader, yeah. You don't notice I lifted, whereas ing words, you'll start to notice them if they're constantly used.
So, obviously, you're known about around here for plays and stuff, so how do you actually write a play or one of your books? You've sold books as well, so.
Well, to write a play, what I usually do is I do six squares, right? And what happens with the six squares is, in the first square, like this play we have coming up, is Nurse Susan on the Fells, getting the plug.
2nd of August, that's
not 2nd of August, Friday, 2nd of August. Basically, you have six squares, and from square one, starts off with your character, the nurse, right? And she has a normal life, okay? So Nurse Susan in square one has a normal life. You've got to get her to square six, and in square once she hits square six.
No spoilers now.
But that world that she started off at in square one has to be totally transformed by square six. So you always start off with 1 and 6, and then you figure out what you're doing in the middle to get that total transformation. So if you imagine The Godfather, right?
Okay.
And The Godfather was written at the start, Michael Corleone is a war hero, comes home from the Second World War, wants nothing to do with the mafia, right? By the end of that movie, he's the most ruthless mafia don there is, that even kills his own brother, right? So then that would be 1 and 6, I've just given you. So then you, all the middle bits are all the fillers that get you from 1 to 6. And also Scrooge, you can pick any film. It's called The Hero's Journey, right? The character arc, right? So if you pick Scrooge at the start is what, Anthony?
A type bastard that wants everything for nothing.
Right,
doesn't
good.
Pick anybody.
Good, I'm doing my teacher mode. Jared, by the end of Scrooge, what is he?
He's a given current man.
So he's totally transformed. So that's again, that's 1 and 6. Okay, and then all you have to do is fill in. So the ghosts come for his 2, 3, 4, and 5. Mm. Is that okay?
Scurrim into his new ways.
Right, so everybody out there now can write a play or write a novel. That's the whole essence, the whole structure of it.
How would you write an erotic novel? I'm joking.
With you, young man, I'm bad.
Is 6 squares the right amount, or could you do, obviously, could you push it to 8? Obviously, 10 would be too much.
Oh, you could push it to 8.
It depends on the person.
You gotta remember, this is your first basic plan. It might expand, it might get things.
So 8 square might have 6 squares?
Alright, so it could change, but I'm saying for getting your basic story down on paper and knowing where you're going, you've got to know what the ending is, you've got to know what the start is. I mean, there's a lot of people sit right by the seat of their pants, where they just go, they think that if they have structure, that'll ruin the whole creative process. But I don't do it like that. I have a bit of structure at the start.
And so how long would it take you to write? So Nurse Susan, how long do you think you're writing Nurse Susan?
Nurse Susan would probably be about 3 months. And if you're writing a novel, then it's probably a year. And that's written every day.
Why would it take so long to write a book compared to a script?
Word count. Basically, a novel is about 100,000 words and a play is 12,000 words. Roughly 10,000 to 12,000 words.
Would that be so a lot of the play then would be based on the in-between, the acting?
A lot of the play, you're still doing description, but mostly a play is more dialogue, whereas when you're writing a novel, you have action, dialogue, internal thoughts, so there's all different things, you know what I mean? But a play, obviously writing a play is far quicker.
Do you have a preference of which you like to write, or is it just 50-50?
You've wrote quite a lot of plays, haven't you?
I've written numerous.
I've seen a few of them, so.
Yeah, I've written, started off by helping out a group over in the markets area. Was asked to go over there by a friend. He knew it and enjoyed writing. I'd actually sent a script to him, which I've never, a play script, and he read it and he said it was too many characters in it. I think that was my first play. And then back then I didn't realise that your budget will also play a big part in your play. Like for example, in this play, we have 6 characters, but we've only 2 actors.
Right,
so they're
yeah.
playing multiple roles. And that's basically because there's no money out there for doing big cast productions. So. But I started off by going over to the markets, helping out a group. We wrote a wee, I think it was a 20-minute script for a group of kids, and it was about suicide and drugs. Then after that, then I wrote one called Blanket Man, which was set in the PD. And it went down, and it was only a rehearsed read, but it was with professional actors, which then went up to the Roddies, where Tony Devlin in it, and stuff, who's their own Brass Neck Theatre Company. And we took it and down really well, everyone loved that. And then after that, I just continued on writing.
I remember I went watched one, Supergrass was quite good. Was one
of Supergrass was the funniest.
Yeah.
That was the same. That was about an Elvis loving IRA man that ends up putting long cash because of the Supergrass trials. And then what happens is his wife, at the start, when he goes in, he's a mechanic, owns his own mechanics business. And so the wife has to take over the business. And so by the end, from 1 to 6, as we're back
yeah.
again. They weren't married at the start. So by the end, they get married, and he gets married in an Elvis jumpsuit, and their honeymoon is in Las Vegas. So all the kids, there's like 20 kids in it, and at the end, they all stand on the stage singing Viva Las Vegas.
Class. What other plays have you done? Because you've done a lot. I mean, I went and watched the Robin Williams one. What was it?
It was the one-man show.
Laughter and Tears.
Robin Williams, The Laughter and the Tears. It was starring Joan Travers. That was
class.
That was one of the most successful. And again, it was because of Joan. Joan's dedication mm-hmm. was second to none. Joan was brilliant. And he just caught the whole essence. And he actually had the accent and everything.
Uh-huh.
But that actually went on to play in theatres all over the north. And then ended up its last show was in the Waterfront. So that done really well, you know.
What other plays have you done?
Well, I've wrote one for here for people as well. Like Phelan Fogle asked me to do one. I wrote one. It was about the Northern Bank robbery.
Right.
And when I met these group of kids in Pullglass, and what happened was one of the kids lived next door to one of the guys who had been arrested and thing. And so what happened was, out of these, I think it was 20 kids that were all sitting around the circle, and I said, right, you just come up with the ideas, I'll go and write it. And so they all threw these ideas out, and they had a vote at the end, and what they voted was they wanted a play on the Northern Bank robbery. Which, funnily enough, I then went away and wrote, was staged in, what do you call the bar in Turf Lodge? The Marty Forsyth, I think it was, or what's the name of it now?
Don't drink a turf.
But anyway, we staged it up there. But funnily enough, a few weeks ago there,
wasn't the Gordon Mona place, no?
No, it wasn't Gordon Mona. No, it's just up the hill, and then you come in. I'm trying to remember.
Trinity Lodge,
in there. That's it. Well done. Right, so we staged it in there. But then a few weeks ago, Danny Morrison, who's a writer himself, he contacted me and said, "There's this guy looking to talk to you about that Northern Bank script that you wrote." Right. And I says, what's he looking? And he says, I think he wants to turn it into a movie, he just want to try and get funding. So I says, well, is he sound? Is he okay? And Danny said, yes. Right. So basically, I got in contact with your man, me and him met up, and then what happened was I emailed him the script. So apparently now he's over in London trying to sell
the
play, but he's going to get someone turned into a screenplay format and then sell it to become a film. So hopefully that works out. Not that I'll get anything out of it, probably. And he says, I'll get a mention in the credit, and I'm like going,
5 minutes
into the credit. I don't want a mention. Can I not have a million quid
in
the profits instead?
Probably
see
it on Netflix.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
What's it like? Like, see that first time you wrote a script and give it to somebody? What was that like? Were you shaking yourself going, oh, is he going to think I'm a dick? Does he expect this of me? Or
what it is,
I wouldn't expect you to be a playwright.
Yeah. Why not?
No, because I would picture a playwright, like a geek sitting in Starbucks with a MacBook and a skinny latte with trousers coming above their ankles and flip-flops. You're halfway there, like, but wearing glasses and having a wee funny check shirt and a bow tie, but you're just an all-round down-to-earth person.
Thank you. The first day was, go back to the question of giving somebody a script, was as I say, that one that I sent to Paul Devaney, and he read it and he gave me a critique saying it was good, but it needed to be less characters in it. And back then, when you're only starting out, I mean, it's a learning curve. Every time you write something, you do learn something new. You know what I mean? That's why I like going to the theatre, going to the Lyric, going and watch Brassneck Theatre Company's place, watching any place, and during Phelan Fogle, watching all the plays, because you always pick up something new about how to do something differently.
So were you nervous giving him that script?
Because he was a friend, I wasn't nervous. I was just looking for feedback. But then I've realised now over the years that I always have a wee, whenever I hand anybody a script when I've written it, I always ask them, just be honest. I don't want you saying, oh, it's class, it's brilliant. That's me, because that won't help my writing. What I need is them to actually be positive and go, that bit there is terrible, that really annoys me. My partner, Christina, for Nurse Susan, when she read it, she near had a heart attack because there was so much cursing, violence, and all sorts in it. And then, so I had to go back and redraft it. And when I redrafted it, I imagined her standing on my shoulder, looking down, going, no, no, no. And so I had to take out loads of the cursing. Still some cursing in it, but it was some really rough, bad bits
just for that,
from the inner sanctum of me.
By the way.
What is it?
Christina's Spanish is just that's it. Going, no one.
Do you have a preference of writing, like a book or a script?
I like books. I like when you finish a book because it's such a challenge. I mean, if anyone's ever written a book, they know how hard it is. You have to do it religiously every day. It takes people years to finish a book. But if you want to do 100,000 words, it's going to be a monumental task, and you have to stick at it every day.
Am I right in saying you had a New York detective series of novels?
I have two, New York Blood and Katana, and they're set in New York, obviously. And basically, I've never been to New York, but how I ended up writing it was my father died, but before he died, and I'd always been writing plays, but what I was doing a lot of community plays, but not getting paid, because I wasn't asking for money. It was just, if people asked me, Kieran, could you help us out with no funding, would you write a play? I'd say, yes, no problem, go and write it. And then, before my dad died, he said to me, you know you'll be writing plays forever if you don't actually ask for money. And he said, and also, and his other point was, why don't you write something else, like set something in New York? So when he died, then that was in my head, and I went, as a tribute to him more, I think that was my way of grieving. Then I just went, right, tell you what, I'll do what he said. And I actually sat for a year and wrote a novel about New York, set in New York. Yeah.
Two?
Yeah.
How many books have you sold?
Ballpark
it if you can.
Okay, I'll tell you this scam that I did. Now it's a legal scam. Is that okay?
Legal or
illegal? Illegal.
I can take it out.
That's illegal.
No, it's
but
okay.
Illegal.
This is a good story. Basically, when you write anything and put it on, upload it yourself on Amazon, what happens is it's a search engine. Amazon's basically a big search engine. So if you type in Kieran McGee, there's not many people know who Kieran McGee is, right? So nobody will look for my book. But there's a famous author called Michael Connelly, and he spells his name Connelly, right? But you're allowed to use a pseudonym on Amazon. And so what I did was I put my book on by Michael Connelly, Connelly, the Irish way, hoping that some of his readership wouldn't realise that would transfer over and think that my novel was actually his, right? But it was so successful that I ended up becoming number 3 in Amazon and in book sales. But I ended up in four months I ended up making it, and it just so it was actually selling out more books than the real Michael Connelly, right?
Shit.
And it was all legal because I was using the pseudonym, which is you're allowed to do.
Yeah.
And I wasn't using Michael Connelly's name because it changed one letter. So by changing that one letter, I kept within the rules of Amazon's laws, and basically I made 20. And so basically what I did with the money was I got a bedroom, knocked into a bathroom, got a big double bath jacuzzi, double bath. So now I call it my Amazon bathroom.
Class.
Yeah.
Very good. Where's the best place to get your books?
Well, Amazon.
Amazon,
yeah.
Under Michael Connelly.
No, they may be.
That's
after I got away with it for 4 months, but they paid me out. You know what I mean? So they paid me the money.
Everyone
said,
stop,
Andy. No, they actually, even they phoned me first. They phoned me first and I wouldn't answer my phone. And so, so they get a few more weeks out of it. And so they couldn't contact me by phone.
I don't think all this.
No, but no, it's all legal. It's all legal. Sorry, leave it in.
Oh, very good. So,
is there anywhere else to buy the books?
No, just on Amazon.
Just Amazon. Kieran McGee.
Kieran McGee.
Kieran McGee. And that's spelled
KIERONMAGEE.
And then CONNO.
And then Michael Connelly, CONNO. Oh, no, it's not on like that anymore. So,
they forced me to take it off.
Sure, God loves the tar.
That was brilliant. That was the best scam I've ever pulled in my life.
See, whenever you write a play, right?
Yeah.
Same sort of maybe for a book, but you be at your shows, don't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Right, so you can get a feel for the atmosphere in the room at the time.
Yeah. No, when you're there, you know what, and also what sometimes what we do is when we get it all ready, we'll have like a private audience. We invite friends and family up to watch it first and get feedback. Like we did that with the Robin Williams one, and then all the feedback, then used that to tweak the play and make it better, and we used all their critique and what they were saying. So we actually do invite an audience, a preview audience.
Like getting a feel for the audience in the room, you know, you might get some crowds.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's what I'm saying. Well, at the end of Robin Williams, people were crying. So were you crying at the end? No.
I have allergies, and the Radis has loads of foliage. That one was very powerful. What do you want people to feel after they've either read your book or watched your play?
Well, I want entertainment. They enjoy themselves first and foremost. And then also sometimes, not all the plays, but sometimes ones will have a message.
Do you try and take them on that emotional journey?
Yes, purposely. Yes. So, like in the Robin Williams one, we wanted people to be crying at the end. Because obviously he commits suicide at the end, and also the whole journey, his whole mental breakdown. So we wanted people to go through that journey with him when he was on stage, and John did it very well.
I learned things that I didn't know about Robin Williams, like his cocaine and stuff, and about all his divorce and stuff.
Didn't know any of that. No, his own inner demons.
And since seeing that play, the things that have come out, like the film that I sent you, the film and stuff that came out that his family made.
Oh yes,
there's so many bits that they didn't touch on.
Oh well, that's what I'm saying. But if it's your family, see, that's the thing. We were thinking of actually taking it over to the Edinburgh Festival and contacting the family. But then because there's so many, some horrible skeletons in his closet, like his cheating on his wife, his cocaine habit, his catching an STD,
and
going public in the news and getting sued for it. All them things were in his throughout his career. So I think if his family's doing a film about him, they're going to leave all them stuff out. You'll not get the real story of his life.
So was that the Fringe Festival in Edinburgh? Were they?
We're talking about going over to do it, but we may actually still go over, but we haven't went over yet, you know.
Right. So that was 2 years ago now, yeah?
Yeah.
So this year we're moving on to Nurse Susan, so tell us a bit about it.
Well, Nurse Susan basically is a story about a nurse. Called Susan, well done, Jared. It's actually, her full name is actually Susan Cunningham, which is my married sister. I like using family names and friends' names and players. So when they go, they get a wee private chuckle.
Yeah.
Or they're sitting watching and going, "Ooh, that's me." Even though they're a gunman or something. You know what I mean? Or in this case, my sister's a nurse and she's not really a nurse. You know what I mean? So.
If you ever do want about a child molester, don't use my name.
Oh yes. No, you'll be like a military soldier called Sergeant.
Oh, thanks.
You know what I mean? So,
see how the mind works.
Mm-hmm.
So basically in this one, the nurse gets a rap at her door. This is scene one, right? Her normal life is she's just arrived home from the RVH, where she's been working in intensive care. And what happens is she's getting a wee glass of wine, she's sitting down, got the remote control, about to watch TV, and there's a rap at her door. And when she opens it, there's a local Belfast gangster there. And she comes in and makes her a proposition and says, your husband owes me $25,000, so you may do this or else he'll get killed or you'll get killed. And so she's forced into the position where she has to take drugs to Dublin and in return, or take money to Dublin in return for drugs, but obviously it all goes pear-shaped then when she arrives in Dublin.
Right.
And what can people expect from it? Should they expect to laugh? Should they cry?
Well, it's a serious play, but there's characters in it and situations in it that will make you laugh. But it's not a humorous one like Supergrass. It's not an Elvis Love and IRA man that here ends up in jail. It's not. It's the same sort of tone as Robin Williams. Robin Williams had comedic elements in it, but it was also a serious message. This one isn't really. This is more about entertainment value. This is more about based on. I love Quentin Tarantino movies. So I always wanted to do.
I was
like
going
to
ask you what's your favorite movie.
Well, Pulp Fiction would be my favorite. So because of that, I always wanted to write one about sex, drugs, rock and roll, and violence. So this is it.
Right, and it's so. I know you said at the start there, but give people the details on it again, like when it is, where it is, how much it costs, where to get tickets.
All right. Well, it's on in the Fens, which is 537 Falls Road, and if you want to phone them, you'll be able to book a ticket, or else just call in. Their phone number is 0289-0619-875, and basically it's running from Friday the 2nd of August to Sunday the 11th of August. It starts at 8 p.m. and it's £10 a ticket.
I actually seen there's a billboard and just beside the films for it.
Yes, we put that up.
We came out shopping the other day. Lo and behold, there was a big Nurse Susan.
Yeah, we painted. Me and David painted that. David Bell he's a maths teacher in CBS school, and me and him painted that, and then we put it up.
So he's non-local, anyway.
Oh yeah. Well, David's actually an ex-Sinn Féin counsellor. So, but now he's too busy. He got made permanent in his teaching job. So he's and got married also last year. So he had a lot on his plate. So now he's getting more into the drama.
And sorry, just a throwback. This is the second week in a row I've mentioned Odyssey Cinemas, but they're actually quite good. There's a Tarantino marathon on. They're putting all Pulp Fiction,
oh, brilliant.
All
Class.
Reservoir Dogs, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, all the Tarantino shows on. So 9th and 13th of August for Pulp Fiction.
All right, brilliant. I'll look it up.
Yeah.
Senior Susan, where would you rank it amongst all the plays that you have done?
Well, this is my first delving into the real criminal side of him, going like a Quentin Tarantino. Because, as I said before, a lot of times I've written plays, I've been asked to write them for other people. So, when you're writing for other people, or it's coming from like a group of kids that you meet and they pick the subject. So this is a subject, because I am a Quentin Tarantino fan,
so
this is a subject that I'm happy to pick. I'm going to go actually try more of this type of stuff.
When you were writing this, were you trying to hold your own attention? You know, like, would I keep watching this? Is that what you were going for? Or?
Yeah, no, I have a friend, Paul Candy. He always said to me something which really stuck in my head was, you can do anything to me, you can beat me, you can hit me over the head with a hammer, but just don't bore me. Right? And when he said that to me, I'm exactly the same. So this is purposely not to bore you. You know what I mean? It's high octane, ferocious, violent. Even though it has been toned down with some of the language, it still has all the violent elements in it.
Okay.
What's the plans for it? So obviously it's all during the feel of the 2nd to the 10th of August.
We were on the waterfront. I'm going to contact the waterfront and see how these 10 nights go, get some feedback, and then if we need it to tweak it, we'll tweak it, and then contact the waterfront and see if we can stick it on there.
Because it'll be a different audience in the waterfront from being in.
That's why. Purposely, as I say, a few of the plays I've wrote are Republican historical plays, which basically is one side of the community. So basically, I'm trying to write plays for everyone. So this, Robin Williams was for everyone. This one's for everyone. You know what I mean? So I purposely want to do that. So if you do see it in a brochure for the waterfront, you go, oh, I'd like to go and watch it. Doesn't matter what religious say.
I mean, you certainly can't tell what area it was being from the poster or anything for it, you know?
Yeah.
You couldn't pencil hold it based on that.
It could be played anywhere in the world, because there is no politics in it, there's no religion in it, it's just a straightforward gangster movie. Gangster play.
Yeah.
So if you have an idea, right? So you wrote this, Nurse Susan. What's the stop? Me going and watching it and then copycatting and just stealing the idea. Is there any sort of process for you to own the rights to this, or?
Well, I can fight like 10 men in a wee lot. So if I find you stealing my,
you genuinely can
stealing my play, I'd be up at your door because I know where you live.
Is there a process, or have you not ventured that far yet as the fan?
No, apparently one of the things some people do is actually what they do is when they finish a draft, they email it themselves.
Right.
And here the email has the date.
Yeah.
Okay. Right? And that's your evidence that it's yours. You know what I mean? So
isn't that a wee trick, another wee hack?
Yeah, that's another wee copyright thing that people do.
How are the ticket sales going?
Tickets are selling well in the films. They're on sale behind the bar, and then I've been getting a lot of phone calls because in the Fela booklet, they put my number in for contacting me. But when people have been contacting me, I've just been saying that, look, I'll put your name down in the book, and when you arrive, the tickets will be there for you. So they just have to arrive
pay
on the night. They don't have to go and get them then. You know, it's just saving people hassle.
Right. So, I mean, for a tenner, it's very hard to begrudge. Get your tickets quick because you don't want to miss it.
Yeah, because I know the effort needed and the work ethic needed to put a play on, a tenner is a steal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? For going and watch somebody that's here, worked for 4 months here rehearsing, a tenner is not.
Yeah.
You know
what I mean? Is there, in your opinion, right, so this is going to be completely subjective, is there a best night to go? Because I know sometimes actors will gauge the audience and they might tweak something, or...
No, you probably mean if it's a packed house versus a quieter, like.
No, just from a
on
performance.
The 10 night run. No,
yeah.
I suppose you won't know until the 10. Obviously, they might do a better performance on one night, or they might hear miss a lane on one night, and so. But I think it's all, as you say, the more busy, the more bunged it is, the more atmosphere you get. I mean, I love going to a play just for that buzz of an atmosphere. Yeah, it's not the same as going to the cinema, and also when you go to a play, people are more open to laughter.
Right.
A play, then you'll hear more laughter at a play than you ever will at a cinema, at a comedy.
Right, okay. And what's next? For
next, we're going to branch out and try. I've written a short film called Tiger by the Tail.
Is that a bio documentary on Colin Frampton?
No.
Crossing Community?
Basically, I'll not give it away at all. Basically, it involves. A young housebreaker, breaking into a house, and when he breaks into the house, it's basically the wrong house he should ever have broken into. So, and it's all what happens then when he breaks into that house.
So that's in the pipeline now then?
Well, I've actually just finished writing it. So now David Bell, who's in Nurse Susan, he's going to do it, being with me. I'm going to star in it, And then as the young hood, we have Liam Groves, and the person that's going to shoot the film is Jared Cunningham. So we're all new to this, we're all going to try it, and we're going to have a lot of fun.
And how do you feel about, are you ready to direct yourself in a film?
Yeah, I love trying new things, and I love the fun of it. I can only, when I'm in the house, I can only watch like 2 hours of TV and then I'm bored. I have to get up and do something. So doing this is actually a bit of crack, and I will thoroughly enjoy it. And I hope to do more of it.
Have you done any acting?
I've done acting in one of Rosaline Walsh's play in the films. So, but it was only like a wee 10-minute thing. So, and then for I wrote these sketches, these historical sketches, and the Titanic Foundation hired us in to do them at the Maritime Festival a few months ago. So what happened was, there was one actor, a retired teacher, Jared
Conway. Was that a street performance?
Street performance. Yeah. So Jared Conway was supposed to do it, but Jared got COPD, and so he couldn't do it.
From Lanaday?
He taught in St. Collins.
The IT teacher.
So he couldn't do it, and so it was a last minute thing, and so then because I had directed them and getting it ready, then what happened was I jumped in and then I did it, but I wouldn't class myself as an actor. I'd rather have a go at short films than being out performing for 3 weeks. We had to perform for 3 days doing five different sketches multiple times. It was hard work. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So the writing in this, was the part wrote specifically for you? Did you know that you were going to be playing the character in the film?
No, again, I was taking inspiration from Tarantino. I just like the whole guns, criminality and thing. And I was also, because it's our first film, it's confined to one house. So that means we don't have to go out looking for locations. We can just do it, make all our mistakes, because I know it's not going to be perfect because we've never did it before. So we're going to learn. But this will be a good process for us to learn. And as I know from writing, you do get better. The more you do, practice makes perfect, as they say.
So what happens in a live environment when someone forgets a line? Because I know one happened one of the shows I went to.
But basically now I've learned that, I know what you're talking about, that was in the Roddies, the Robin Williams one. John forgot his line, and I was sitting in the front row, and I was supposed to give him the line. Right? And when the way he tells me that he's forgot a line is, he would make it like sound like part of the play, and so what he would say to me was, hit me.
Yeah.
Right? And so on that night in the Roddies, he went, hit me! And I just looked at him and went, because I'd been so engrossed in watching his performance, I'd stopped following the script. And so it took me a couple of minutes to flick forward to the pages and then find the line and then give him it. But after that, I learnt my lesson, and then after that, I was never. Yeah, that's what I'm saying, you're complacent once, but after that then I never again took my head off the script and followed every time. And it happened once again where he said hit me. I think we're in the Monaghan Theatre, and he said it again, hit me, and I give it right away. So once bitten, twice shy. So basically you always try and find a line that fits in with the play. Like for Nurse Susan, because we're still a couple of weeks away, we haven't even got a line yet. But I'm going. They're not allowed to go, I forgot my line.
Yeah.
And so as all the audience go, oh Jesus, right? So they're going to say something like, "Hand me that syringe."
Mm-hmm.
Is that okay? So then, we'll have a key phrase, and then I'll be on the ball giving them the line, hopefully.
What about pass me that gun?
Pass me that gun. Yeah, that's it.
Mm-hmm. Good. Have you any advice for inspiring playwrights?
My advice is, do it yourself. Get a group of friends around you. See, it's very. A plan for the Arts Council, a plan for Belfast City Council. It's always tough competitively to get funding. So basically, don't let that put you off. If you've no money, this one, Nurse Susan, I applied to the Belfast City Council to get funding for it. We never got it, but we went ahead and did it anyway. So we're doing it, but we're all working for free. So I would say, if you want to do theatre, if you want to do writing, you want to do it, but theatre particularly, you need people of like-minded who want to do it and are willing to work for free, then get them on board, and also obviously make sure they have talent, okay, and then your play will go well.
Is there any particular genre you enjoy watching?
I've went and watched loads of different plays. So I like a good comedy play, I have to say. My next play I'm writing is a comedy play. It's called, again, it's named after one of my sisters, but it's called Shauna's. I have another sister called Shauna. So this one's called Shauna's Single Again. And basically what it is, she's in a relationship at the start. Again, your number one box,
yep.
Right? And what happens is, at the start, she is... she's a huge Game of Thrones fan, and so it's because it's a comedy. It starts off with Emmons wearing Game of Thrones costumes with swords and stuff, and they're sitting down to watch the final episode of Game of Thrones, and then obviously she finds out that her partner's been cheating on her, and so it all goes unravels from there. So it's a comedy. So that's an out and out comedy.
So we'll go for quickfire round here.
Okay.
Just first thing. Try not to dwell too much. Go ahead, Jerry.
So you have two options, right? Pick one, quick as you can. Coke or Pepsi?
Coke.
Summer or winter?
Summer.
Fruit or veg?
Fruit.
Money or fame?
Money.
Housecoat or dressing gown?
Housecoat.
Texting or talking?
Texting.
Facebook or Twitter?
Facebook.
iPhone or Android?
iPhone.
Irish women or foreign women?
Foreign women.
Theatre or cinema?
Theatre.
Love or money?
Love.
Book or movie?
Movie.
And reading or writing?
Writing.
How do you find those questions?
They were good.
If there was a biopic of your life done, say you become really successful, right? And they do, you want to do a biopic on you, who plays Kieran McGee / Michael Conley?
It'll have to be someone with a right arm tattoo sleeve. You could do it, no, what's your
left?
Your left, right? Somebody that's obviously built like Arnold Schwarzenegger. Somebody that has a square head. so basically, a younger version of Arnold Schwarzenegger would do, really. Is there one out there?
Right,
so,
go ahead, Jerry.
I was going to ask them if he wants any good TV shows or anything at the minute, or is there anything caught your attention?
I'm watching The Handmaid's Tale at the minute, and it's really good. If anyone hasn't watched it, I would advise you to watch it. It's about this dystopian future where society has changed after a nuclear war. And just watch it. Don't want to spoil it for you, but it's really good. And it's graphic and violent, but brilliantly acted.
Here's a good one for you. I don't know if you've watched it. It's on Netflix. It's a gangster one.
Right.
Bad Blood.
Bad Blood? Who's...
it's one of the ones from... What do you call that biker one? Sons of Anarchy.
Oh, right, okay.
One of the main characters in there.
Oh, I have seen it.
About
yes,
the Montreal
I have
Mafia.
Yes,
yeah.
I have seen it. He's very good in it. Yes, no, I said see it. No, I love all gangster genre. I do like Sopranos, The Wire, Love, Hate, all that type of stuff I love.
What's your favourite book you've ever read?
Actually, it's something to stay with me for The Kill a Mockingbird. And another one was Misery by Stephen King. I love that. I mean, they weren't gangster genres, but they were really Misery. I'd go for Misery by Stephen King.
Any recommendations for books for people to read? Bar those two.
Well, Michael Connelly is always good. With an O.
The original.
Not with an E. He might be an LA superstar, but the one from Belfast is far better.
Anything from him? So... just a quick recap on the play Nurse Susan by Kieran McGee. Tickets available at the Felons. You can go up and ask.
Buy the bar at the door.
Yeah, you can buy them and get them in advance, or you can go up on the night and pay at the door.
Yeah, I would advise getting them in advance because they probably will sell out. And the dates are Friday the 2nd of August to Sunday the 11th of August.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah,
correct.
And it's starting.
Starts at
8 p.m. Doors open at 7:30, and then that's the way we always do it. And then the play starts at 8.
And two actors, David Bell and Naomi McDonald.
No,
Naomi.
Neve McDonald. Good thing about these plays, what I like, you can go up and have a drink.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, it's a good night out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you, I have a load of friends coming and a load of family coming. So, but I always like. It's actually. Nurse Susan, my sister Susan Cunningham, she's married to Jim Cunningham, But on the opening night, Friday the 2nd of August, it's actually his birthday. So we're all going, so all my family's going on the first opening night because it's Jim's birthday. So we're all going to stay and have a drink as well to celebrate his birthday. But it's a good way to get family and friends out.
Excellent. Thanks very much for coming on,
Kieran. Thank you very much, Andy. Thank you.
I'll see you on the 2nd of August.
Yes, see you then. Yeah. All right, buddy.